Hey there, this is Seth Juarez with Channel 9, here with Andrew Hall. We're in Building 18.
18, that's right.
Fantastic. Tell us what you do.
So I'm the program manager for the Visual Studio Debugger.
Oh, fantastic. So we thought we would do a 101 introduction for how the workflow goes for making programs and debugging inside of Visual Studio.
Absolutely.
All right, well, show us what you got.
Yeah, so I think the inspiration here is all of us learn how to program at some point. And there comes a magical moment where you learn that there's such a thing as a breakpoint and stepping. And unfortunately, it's not intuitive, so we need to make sure that we understand
that.
Oh,
you just don't console.writeline everything?
Well, that's what I did for a lot of college.
Me too.
We did a lot of stuff in Linux, so console.writeline was sadly the way to go. C++ and Linux. GDB was not the most friendly thing.
No, it wasn't very friendly, actually.
But yeah, Visual Studio is a great IDE. One of the things that people tell us they like the most about it is the debugging experience that we have. Mm-hmm. And so I'm going to use C# today, but everything I'm going to show applies to any language Visual Studio supports, whether it's C++, C#, Visual Basic, JavaScript, Python, et cetera, et cetera.
Cool.
I'll say the most basic thing in debugging is the concept of a breakpoint. And so what a breakpoint is going to tell the debugger that when an application reaches a certain point in execution, that it's going to stop, and then I can look at the state of the program.
Fantastic. So what is this program doing?
The program is going to eventually calculate the area of a circle or the area of a rectangle, depending on what the user is going to input.
Got it.
So it's not going to do anything yet, but if I click Start Debugging, so there's a couple ways to do that. I can click the Start button up here. I can go Debug, Start Debugging, or I can use the keyboard and just press the F5 key. So I'll go ahead and start debugging, and it's just going to ask me for the name of a shape. So if I type in rectangle, then it should ask me for the height and width and then spit out the dimensions.
Right.
We haven't got that far yet, but that's ultimately what our program's going to
do. Cool.
So first thing I want to make sure is that the shape name is being just input correctly, that I've written this code correctly. So I'm going to use the debugger here to verify. One of the great things the debugger can help you do is actually validate that your application is just executing like you think it is. It doesn't just have to be used to solve bugs, especially when you're first learning to program. A lot of times you're like, oh, I'm going to write some code. Is this going to behave like I think it's going to? Set a breakpoint, make sure, just verify. So I'm going to click Start Debugging. And what's going to happen is after I type the name of this, let's try to spell it correctly, I'm going to hit that, and you can see that it's turned yellow, and I don't see my application executing anymore. Mm-hmm. And so what's happened is my application is actually not executing. It's paused under the debugger, and I have the ability to inspect the state of my application. So inspecting variable values can be done in a couple ways in the debugger. One of people's favorite ways is if you just hover over the name of a variable, we pop up this little thing that's called a data tip, and that's going to display the value to me right here in the editor.
Cool.
The other option is we have these watch windows down here below. So I have the autos window. That's the default window in a lot of the various profiles that you get. And it's going to try to be smart and show me variables that I'm using in proximity to wherever this little yellow arrow is. It's called my instruction pointer. And this stops right before the line of code that's about to execute.
So that means that that line has not been executed yet, but everything before in scope has.
That's correct.
Okay.
So I have not actually run this if line yet.
Okay.
That sometimes is a point that gets people sometimes as well, because one of the things you just have to learn.
Right.
Or
you can watch this video.
Or you can watch this video.
I'm just saying.
And we'll be teaching you.
That's right.
So the other windows that we have locals. Locals shows me all of my local variables. These are variables that only are defined inside the current method that I'm debugging inside of.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see here, I only have a shape name and the arguments that are passed in.
Right.
And then we have the watch that allows me to manually type in anything that I want.
Mm-hmm.
Now at the moment, I don't have anything else interesting, but I could type in args.length, for example.
And you get IntelliSense in that window.
IntelliSense in this window for most languages.
Right.
And so when I enter that, it's telling me that there's no arlink, but I can type anything custom in that I want.
Got it.
If I want to drill into properties or something like that.
Could you put an expression in there?
I could put an expression in there. So let's say shape. So I'm going to look at shape name equals circle. So let's see what happens if I type that in here. And it's going to tell me that that's going to be false.
Cool.
So I can, absolutely do that as well. So I can try things out. Another window that I've closed now, but that can be really convenient for doing that is called the immediate window. So it does the exact same thing, if I can find it on here, as the watch window, but I can do things like, so I can say shape name, IntelliSense again, and let's say I wanted to use this equals instead of Let's say rectangle. And I can do that, and it's going to tell me that it's false.
It's kind of like a command line area, but with everything in scope.
Yeah, it's going to ultimately do under the covers the same thing that the watch window is going to do. It's going to pass it to something called the expression evaluator that's provided by any given language that you're debugging. So for example, the C# compiler provides the C# expression evaluator. The VB compiler provides the VB expression evaluator. But yeah, it's just a command window form. And the nice thing about this is you have a nice history of everything that you've evaluated.
Cool. So just to summarize, we have autos, locals, watch, and immediate window. The quick sentence for how they're all different.
Yeah, so autos tries to be smart about what it shows me. Every language can pick its own rules, but basically, if I recall correctly, the general rule of thumb is one line behind and like two lines back.
Got it.
So any variables that are used within a few lines of where the current instruction pointer is are going to appear here, and whether that's going to be true, whether they're global, class member variables, or local variables.
Got it.
The locals window is going to show me all local variables defined in the current function that I'm debugging.
So anything in scope or just that function?
Any local variable defined in that function.
Got it. Okay.
And so that is kind of scope, but.
So if you have like a class member that's public, will that show up in the locals?
The class member.
So say you have.
No.
Okay. There you go. Okay.
Yep. So it's only, yeah, not in scope, just truly local variables to that function. The watch window is my blank canvas to type whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And the immediate window is a command window to evaluate. And we do hear from a lot of people that one of the things I like about the immediate window, as I said, it leaves now a permanent history of things that I've evaluated. If I change the value of shape name, for example, so I can actually change values in the debugger as well. So let's make it, say, circle now, for example. Before I do this, let me dump shape name here. So let's evaluate shape name. So it's going to tell me that it was rectangle. Now, if I'm going to paste what I just started to do, I'm going to change it to circle, and I'll try to spell it correctly. So now the value of shape name has changed to circle, and you can see that the watch window is updated. So I have lost history. So if I go over here to my autos, I can see shape name's this. So all of the watch windows are going to only show me the current value of something.
So it turned red. What does that mean?
Red means that it changed.
Okay.
So if you step, the most common time that you'll see it turn red is if you modify something as you're stepping through code, and we haven't quite gotten there yet, but we turn values that have changed red, sort of just help them jump out at you,
cool,
and catch your attention really quickly.
So like if you're in a loop, you'll see the things that are changing constantly.
Correct.
Got it.
But yeah, so going back to the immediate window, I now have a history that tells me that shape name at the point in time that I typed this in was rectangle, whereas that history is actually not preserved over here in the watch windows. The watch windows are kind of a point in time where this is that permanent record. So that can be useful sometimes when you're trying to, you know, type this, type that. Oh, what was the value three steps ago,
right,
or three iterations ago? Oh yeah, I still have it up here in my in the immediate window, where the watch window doesn't show that information to you.
That's really cool. So this is breakpoints. You click over on the margin of it, you debug by hitting F5, you stop, and then you can look at everything that's going on in the program.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know, actually, it's been a little while ago, I don't remember how I set it, but yeah, the most common way with a mouse to set a breakpoint is you just click over here in this little gray margin
F9, right
here.
Right?
Or F9 is the keyboard shortcut, yeah, so I can press either one works.
Nice.
And everybody has their own workflow that they prefer. Some people are keyboard centric, some people are mouse centric.
Fantastic. So we talked about setting the breakpoints. Is there only one way to set a breakpoint?
Well, we talked about the mouse. We talked about the keyboard. If for some reason you are really inspired or you need to do it via some other thing, you can actually come in here via the debug menu and choose to do that, and it'll set on your
current
line.
What I mean is can you do more with a breakpoint? Is it just like it'll stop here and that's it?
Oh, yeah. Great questions. You can do more with a breakpoint. We have these little settings up here.
Mm-hmm.
So I can go into my settings, and I can choose to set conditions on a breakpoint, for example.
I see.
So I could say I only want to stop if shape name, and I'm going to get my IntelliSense here again, equals. I guess it helps if I actually make it equal to something. Let's pick Seth. That's
yes.
Who you are.
I do have a shape. Sometimes it's round.
So then if we start debugging, I'm going to type rectangle. and we didn't actually hit the breakpoint because that condition wasn't satisfied.
So there's a way to set a conditional breakpoint. Stop here only if this condition applies. Can you nest those conditions, or is it just like one expression for a Boolean expression?
Yeah, so you can nest them. It's going to be conceptually anything you would type inside an if statement. So I could make this compound. I could say or shape name equals Andrew. So I could do that. I could, you know, basically anything you could do inside an if statement.
There's also an add condition.
There is an add condition. So we have other types of conditions that we support as well. We have a hit count breakpoint. So you can do it based on the number of times that the breakpoint's been hit.
Okay.
So if you're inside a for each loop or something like that, mm-hmm. you say, well, I know that the first 10 are succeeding just fine. Instead of, I don't know exactly what the condition is going to be on the 11th one. Let me just set a hit count of type 10. And so if I do hit count, I can then choose, you know, is a multiple of or greater than equal to. So the scenario I just said, okay, I know the first 10 are fine. So let's say if the hit count is greater than or equal to 11, and now I can just keep debugging and it'll be hit every time after it's been hit at least 11 times.
Got it. What other conditions are there?
The,
what types
the last type of condition that we have is called a filter breakpoint. And I think for the purposes of this, we can gloss over that.
Yeah.
It's generally for multi-threaded or multi-process code. You basically ask the debugger to break based on the machine, process information, or thread information.
So you can not only just set a breakpoint, but you can set a breakpoint with conditions based on the first one is conditional expression, a filter, or a hit count.
That's correct.
Perfect. Cool.
And then the last type of thing that we can do as well is we have this actions checkbox down here. You can ask the debugger to print a message when you hit your breakpoint rather than and actually automatically continue execution.
Mm-hmm.
So if this is a lot of times very useful inside loops as well, if you just want a record of everything that happened and it goes to the output window. So I can type plain text. So I'm going to say hello, and then will anything inside a curly brace. So I type this is going to be dump the actual value of it at runtime. So let's pick shape name here. And then we have other information via dollar sign called pseudo variables. So I could, for example, give the name of the function that I'm currently in, if we're dump the call stack or something
cool.
like that. So let's go ahead and do that just to show that working. We showed the conditions working. I can disable the condition without having to delete it. So
cool.
if I spend some time setting it up.
This looks like a new window. Is this a 2015 thing?
This is new in 2015.
Okay.
In 2013, in previous versions, all this functionality was available in separate dialogs.
Yeah.
We took them and combined them into one, and you accessed that. We didn't have this nice little bar up here. You had to right-click, and then they had various context menus.
Right.
So we've collapsed them down to conditions and actions now. Condition was always condition. When hit was this trace point functionality on here that
mm-hmm.
we're about to look at, the logging the message. You had hit count was its own thing, and then filter was its own thing.
Is this trace thing new?
No, this has been in there as well.
Man, because I have been sillily, is that a word? I've been silly and doing my console.write lines, but this is a way to do it, but as a debugging thing and not necessarily in the code.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's go ahead and run this. The other nice thing about this new window is it's non-modal, so I don't even have to close it if I don't want. I can just click Start Debugging, and then let's type our shape name, rectangle. I hit this, and now if I go to the output window, so view, output down here, I can actually see the message that I printed, hello rectangle, and then
and
the name
the
of the function.
Function
that I was in.
That's really cool. And I think the cool thing about that is you can print it out without having to stop.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that was if we go back up here, that's this checkbox that says continue execution. If I unchecked that, you'll see that the shape of the breakpoint icon up here will actually change back to a circle. And so circle indicates that we're going to stop,
mm-hmm.
and a triangle indicates that we're just going to continue execution
Got
after
it.
We do whatever you've asked us to do.
Cool.
So let's go ahead and close that. And let's go ahead and stop debugging. So I think the next thing, so we've talked about breakpoints a lot, but another really useful piece of functionality in the debugger, which is kind of conceptually a one-time breakpoint, is stepping.
Right.
So let's start debugging. Let's enter the name of our shape here. We're going to enter that. And so I could, if I wanted, you know, I haven't actually implemented any functionality yet, but I'm going to say, okay, I'm going to try to figure out what's going on. I want to see the flow through this if statement. I could set breakpoints down here and make sure that all of those get hit, but a better option is to just step in the debugger. Right. And the debugger has several options for stepping, so I realize I should actually add a little bit of code here. So let's actually calculate the rectangle area now. Let's make a function call to do that. So now when I start debugging, we're going to say, so what I'm expecting is I'm expecting it to prompt me and ask me for the values of the rectangle.
Right.
So I'm going to say rectangle, and boom. And so I can step in the debugger. Normally, people use the keyboard. It's kind of the easier way to do it. But we'll show up here. We have icons, and you can also do it from the debug menu. So F10 is going to do a step over.
Okay.
And that means in the context of a function call that we're going to not go into that function. We're just going to step over it and execute it. And I'll show what that means here in a second. The other option we have is step into. So for example, so let's go. You go ahead and use step over to get down to down here. And so now if I go calculate rectangle area, if I choose step over, I'm not going to step into the rectangle area. I'm just going to enter height, let's say 5, enter width 4, and then now execution, right? The debugger never stopped down in that particular method.
What happens when you do a step into where it's just an expression, like shape name equals circle? Is it the same as just doing a step over?
Yeah, so that's a great question. If you step over, do a step into on something that there's really nothing interesting to step into, the debugger is going to treat it like a step over.
Got it.
But if I do it on something like my rectangle area here, which is another interesting thing you can do, you can actually change where the debugger is executing. Notice we're down here. I grabbed this little yellow arrow. I dragged it back up.
I see.
I'm going to execute calculate rectangle again.
Hold on. That happened really fast. This is something I haven't seen. So the yellow arrow is the execution pointer of where currently we are in the
program. Correct.
You said, I want to go back.
I want to go back. Yeah, let's do it one more time. So let's say height 5, 4. I'm down here. Mm-hmm. I wanted to step into that. Mm-hmm. I went ahead and just grabbed this. I dragged it up, and it means I'm going to now start execution here again.
That's cool. I did not know that.
There's a few limitations to that. Like I can't step into a different function that I'm currently executing because that would be very weird.
Yeah. Things could happen. There could be explosions.
So it has to be within the normal execution flow of your sort of application. We try to prevent you from shooting yourself in the foot, so to speak, and really screwing things up.
Okay.
But now I'm going to choose the step into functionality. And instead of calculate rectangle just executing on its own and then me stopping on the other side of it, I'm going to, when I choose step into, I'm now down here in the calculate rectangle area function itself.
And then the locals change because you see everything that's in scope there.
Yep. That's absolutely correct. And then, of course, my autos, actually it's telling me there's nothing interesting at the moment in the autos. And I'm going to start using the keyboard now because it's a little easier than clicking up there. And as I step, like we talked about, you're actually going to see the autos change as I move through the code because it's deciding what's interesting in the current function that I am. So enter my height. Let's make it a really big rectangle now. It's 10. Mm-hmm. And then it's going to prompt me for my width. And so I step over that again. You know, let's say a 5 now. And so I can continue to step like that.
Got it.
The last piece of really, that can be really, really useful is you could imagine that, okay, I'm done. I validated that everything's useful down in this function. I just want to get back up to where I was.
Right.
Now I could scroll back up. I could find a breakpoint and I could hit start debugging again. So if I'm down here, right, I can set a breakpoint. I can continue. I can run to that breakpoint. I can unset it. I could have done that to get back up here after the end of the function, but we also have another piece of functionality that is called step out, and that's shift F11, and when I choose step out, the debugger is just going to bring me back, finish executing whatever current function I'm in, and bring me back up to the top of that.
I see. Cool.
So let's go ahead, and so now if I step over this again, so let's do that one more time just to show exactly how that works. So let's go ahead and step into that. I'm now going to choose the step out functionality. It's going to prompt me for the height and width again, 10, 5, and now it's going to stop after that function.
Got it. So if you accidentally stepped in and you're like, oh man, I don't want to have to go through everything, you can step out of that right away.
Yeah, or not even an accidental step in. You're trying to find a bug or validate that something works at the beginning of the method. You see what's going on.
Got it.
And then you say, oh, okay, like I don't need to finish execute stepping through the rest of this method. I don't want to. It's really a productivity thing as opposed to scrolling back up, finding the right place, and then setting the breakpoint.
Got it.
Although while we're on that subject, we probably should at least talk about the call stack window, which is also not there. But another useful thing that you can do for that to save you scrolling functionality. So I'm going to go ahead and step in here. I'm going to open the call stack window. So all of the debugger tool windows are available under the debug menu, the windows here. That's an interesting piece of functionality. No, most people we see when they first come into Visual Studio naturally go look on the view menu, because that's where most of the windows are. So it's a logical place to look. Unfortunately, that's just not where the debug windows are. We put them under the debug menu. So call stack window is what I was going to show. So the call stack window shows me where I currently am. I do not have just my code on, which is what normally would have been on. So normally, sorry, nothing like changing settings on the air.
No, that's okay. Because what's going to happen is someone's going to go in here and say, oh my goodness, there's all this other code. How do we turn that off?
Yeah, so by default, we have a feature called just my code on. And so what that does is we try to show you only the code that you actually care about. And this is normally what the default view would be if you hadn't changed your settings. Right. Like I came in with my settings changed. And so we all that stuff that says collapsed down into this gray external code node right here, that was all the stuff that was taking up, making the window really tall. But if I wanted to do the breakpoint trick that I said before, I needed to go further back up. I didn't want to, I was several methods deep and I didn't want to do like step out, step out, step out. I can navigate to any other place that this was called from by double clicking in the call stack window. It brings me back up. I could set my breakpoint
here. It looks like it's green now. What does that mean?
Yeah, so yellow means the current location. Green means that that is on the call stack, but that's not where my current instruction pointer is.
Got it. Okay.
So as you continue to walk up the call stack, you'll see green. I guess they're not really instruction pointers. You'll see green arrows indicating that this is a
how
call site.
It got to it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So now if I click this continue again, it's going to behave just like we'd expect, 5, 5, just to make it easy, and now I'm going to hit my breakpoint. So call stack window is another good window to be aware of when you're going functions.
That's cool stuff.
The last thing I want to show, because I think it's a really fun piece of functionality that it's not intuitive, that a lot of people don't necessarily know, it's pretty unique to Visual Studio, is a piece of functionality we call edit and continue. So I'm going to step into this, and we actually have the ability, if you see something wrong or that you don't like, to make edits to your code on the fly.
I see.
So let's say, for example, I said but the area is here, but let's say I also wanted to calculate the volume of a three-dimensional thing. So I can actually start adding code. So I could say, console.write, and let's go say enter depth. Pull in like this, and then let's go ahead and add and it helps if I type correct things. Well, let's say int depth, and so now let's say go up here and say I have to do this correctly. Oops, I guess it helps if I put it in the right place as well.
That's what we're doing. We're debugging.
We are debugging. Yeah, so absolutely. Let's just go down here. It'll be easier for me to not get confused if I do it down here, and then we're going to say depth equals console.readLine, and this is not going to be happy because this needs to be a string. That's what that's going to return, and so depth str, and let's just be really fancy here and use a var type, and this will be an int, and now it's going to say depth equals
int.parse
of depth str. And instead of actually calculating the volume right now, let's just go ahead and say, let's go ahead and do it. Volume equals depth times height times width. Hopefully I remember my basic geometry. And let's do this now, console.writeLine. Volume is volume. Now if everything worked correctly, when I press F5, those code changes are going to be applied. So enter height, 5, enter width, 10, enter depth, 2. I've hit my breakpoint, but if we look up here now, we can actually see the area is 50 and the volume is 100.
That's cool. Is there limitations to the type of code you can edit during edit and continue?
There are some limitations to the type of code that you can edit during edit and continue. At the moment, we only support that for C#, Visual Basic, and C++.
Got it.
And there are certain types of edits that are not supported. We've removed most of those in Visual Studio 2015. There's a lot more limitations in Visual Studio 2013.
Oh, okay.
Meaning you can't edit lambda expressions, you can't edit inside async code in Visual Studio 2013.
But you can now in 2015.
You can now in 2015, that's correct.
Yeah, because I remember trying to edit lambdas, and it's like, yeah, you can't do that.
And then in 2012, because we still talk to people that, you know, are using older versions than 2013, you also couldn't do it in 64-bit code. But we fixed that in 2013.
Got it. Well, that's cool. Anything else you want to add? This is a pretty good little primer.
No, I think this is probably a great start. Maybe we can do another session covering some other stuff later.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, for me, I mean, obviously a lot of the stuff was 101, but there were some gaps that were filled, I think, for me at least. I didn't know you could move the pointer around, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that's a handy tip that, again, one of those things that you just have to know.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for spending some time with us. Thanks for watching, and we will catch you next time. Take care.